So, as we were just ending yesterday in the discussion, that we want to apply some aspect of the Vedic culture, then we should actually look into what is the aspect surrounding it, or the situation in which it's applied, and then all the various elements that are there that are included. So then you get a complete picture, and that may mean we have to do some, you know, research or discussion on these side areas, just like yesterday the discussion was, what was it, about engagements. So then this means then you have to understand what are the qualifications for training the girl, the qualifications for training the boy, then the families themselves, what qualifications they have, the situations under which that's done, and then the mood that is behind all these that make them happen. And then if that's there, you can apply something for time and circumstance. Otherwise, then there's a difficulty in application. Because the external form may be adjusted to some degree. Just like, you know, the idea is that as soon as the girl comes to maturity, in other words, she basically becomes a woman at 12 in her, how she thinks and her mentality, while the boys don't actually become men until late teens or early 20s. You know, the recommendation is, ideal is like mid-20s. And then they're fully mature. But the girls at a much earlier age than mature in this way. So Prabhupada but according to time and place and circumstances, you know, what is allowed in your particular countries or that, then this must be adjusted. Some countries allow at 16, some get married, some at 17, some at 18. So one must make adjustments. So that must be always considered when this is being done. So one therefore is trying to get the principle that's behind it. Though one may not be able to get the detail, the principle behind it must be achieved. So there must be study. It can't just be that we have a particular agenda we want. Like I remember there was something that, there was one devotee, he was interested in having a second wife. You know, he is specifically interested in marrying this young girl. So then, from that, then he does this whole big research and everything like this, and then shows how Prabhupada gives so many quotes on how having more than one wife is proper and this and should be young girl, all that, because he has his particular agenda. Now in this, then certain major points are pointed, you know, were kind of like glossed over, like those who live in the temple or do, you know, that are maintained by the temples and that, they couldn't have. Like there was, you know, someone else who wanted, so therefore Prabhupada said, well, if he wants a second one, he has to move out. You know? He can't. So, these different things. So we have to see what is the whole mood and everything behind it. It's not just that we're attracted, but it's that the ability to expand one's facility for shelter and all this and that. We see before is that those who had more than one wife, then each one had their own private facility. It wasn't that they were all packed up in the same place. So many, many considerations come out of these, that when we approach the Vedic culture, it's perfect, it's a perfect system. But as Maharaj is pointing out this morning, in class, just because you're going to medical school doesn't mean that now you can just go into the operating theater and do what you want. So we have to have that full knowledge. And full means, Prabhupada gives it in his books. It's not something esoteric that, or so difficult to get. Devotees have read, certain areas are very simple and straightforward. And if we take those and then apply them with the mood that is there, you know, it's very important that we see in a pastime that a particular activity is going on, the mentalities that are there, and then the philosophical or cultural points Prabhupada brings up in relationship to that. If we studied all that, then we get something. We can't just take something, you know, like Maharaj said yesterday, you just go on the folio, you make a couple of hits, they seem to, you know, what you like, and then now you start establishing whatever is your your philosophy. One must be very, very careful that it's consistent. It means that there's, in a situation that is there, something is going on, and Prabhupada gives what is, if there's an important mentality, he tells it. You know? If there's something, it's there. If not there, it's in another pastime. Maybe the same thing won't be repeated. You know, if it's not such a main point, and sometimes it will be. So we have to enter these things with a deeper, more mature knowledge. Just like the idea, let's say we're taking this example. The daughter should be married. So now the whole point in there is protection. The father has given care to the daughter, and whatever she's needed, he's taken care of. He's always seen that the environment is very nice, everything is well, she's well taken care of, whatever her needs are. Now, as she becomes a woman, now she naturally wants to move into the family life. So now it's his business to arrange that for her, find a suitable boy, find all these different things. So the whole inspiration for this is shelter. There's not something else. It's not, you know, the girl is trouble, got to get rid of her, like this. No, the father's never thinking, I want to get rid of the daughter. In fact, the rules are such that it forces, practically. Otherwise, he would just let her stay in the house, like we see with Prabhupada's daughter. Then it's like, when his daughter was 14, you know, he wasn't so worried, because, you know, she's there, he's taking care, relationship is nice. But then his wife was feeling that, you know, we're going to be so socially unacceptable by the members of our community that our daughter's not married and everyone will think there's something wrong with her. So that means she's uncultured. So that means we're uncultured. We're not training. So she said, you know, you either get her married now or I jump off Howard Bridge. So then, you know, then Prabhupada went out and made the arrangements. So the point is the shelter is there. The daughter is never feeling bad in this situation. So it's a matter of creating or expanding that nice situation. So if that is the mood, then you can see, I can't arrange something that's not going to happen. I can't arrange something that, you know, that the girl will be exploited. I can't, you know, so he's very, very careful on how he deals in this situation. So many, many things have to be considered, because that shelter is the principal driving element in this, the family making the arrangement. Like that. So then, since we've added to the global warming for the last 3 days, maybe it would be good if there's any questions or something, because the subject is so vast, in 5 days it's hard to say which direction to go. So if anyone has any specific, you know, questions on either what we've discussed or some other areas within either the culture, meaning the sadhana, the varnashram, or their connection, or in any of these kind of things, then it might be good. Yes?
I was just wondering about more of the particular details of Ajit's discussion in relation to the subordinate and superior person. Because sometimes I'm sure you mentioned in certain body language, like, you know, if you're rubbing an eye and keeping that open, then this is like a sign of aggression.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, maybe a few examples of things to avoid. Body language, if you're not so conscious of it, actually shows, you know, arrogance or improper
attitude. There's sensitivity. There's an interesting, here's another point that we can, it's a side point, but it's can be applied for this, is that what experiences stick in our mind? This is a very interesting thing. See, things that stick in your mind that you don't forget are things that you experienced in the present, right? And those have the most influence on your life, because generally the living entity, being in passion and ignorance, they're always dreaming of some ideal situation in the future, or thinking about something in the past, either lamenting for it having been lost or that one experienced it. Right? So then we see that the Vedic culture, so that means the present moment that is can be obtained by two ways, basically. One is by situating oneself in goodness. Someone is just working now and is conscious of what's going on now, so that one gets that experience. And that's the best, because that's the situation in the spiritual world. Because of always being just thinking of Krishna right now, then they're always in the present. There's no past or future. But otherwise, it's by something to do with generally the senses or something we want, you know, some desire. So then we become conscious of the present or something that shocks us or, you know, like that. Like if you like someone will watch a movie, and when they're watching this movie, if their mind is going here and there, at the end of the movie, they'll say it wasn't a good movie. But there was something in the movie that just riveted their attention. Even if it's just once, for one moment, one exciting scene, or just one something, then you'll say it's a good, because that experience of the present gives so much more pleasure than anything in the future or past. So the living entity is always looking for that. That's why they do crazy things, like you do bungee diving or something else, they're crazy. It's because that moment, that, you know, that fear of death and all those things, just rivets your attention for that moment. And then after a while you get used to it, and then even that doesn't give you a buzz. And then you look for something else that will bring that moment to you. So this thing is, what we see, what happens is one of the elements that means in the modern culture. See, the Vedic culture was, you would use your sensitivities in all the relationships, all the rasas. So this then would create more of a deeper feeling. One's own experience plus the interactions would be much more felt by all the parties involved. Because one's sensitivities were used in all areas. But nowadays we're basically trained only to use our sensitivities in the conjugal relationship. So when one is in that kind of mood, then one is always very, very sensitive. You see, the boy can be on one side of the temple room, there can be a whole crowd, the girl can be on the other side of the temple room, but they're totally aware of each other's existence. You know, any move, any look, you know, was that, were they looking at me, what was that, was, you know, all these things. And that is actually what's creating the interest, is because you're at the present because of it. Because we see when you arrange that it's all right for them to be together, and they're married, one loses that sensitivity. And with time, and then it's just ordinary, right? So that means that instead of the senses and the hormones creating that presence of the moment, you can only create that mood by following the rules and regulations of duty. Because that, then you're in goodness, so then you can live at the moment and actually have proper relationships. Start the whole process again with somebody else. Right? So the same sensitivity can be used also, means not the same motive, but the same sensitivity to noticing your surroundings then can be used with friends, like you're with friends, you're talking with friends. Then there wasn't a acknowledgement of going different ways, right? So then you can't just walk off. There has to be a disengagement on the mental level. Otherwise, then the other person may wonder, well, hey, what happened to them? You know? So these sensitivities, and those weaken the relationship. So it may stick you there. You may want to go do this, do that, but you get stuck a little bit. But it enhances the relationship. So we always have to see what is the most important thing. Is the relationships or our own thing? If it's some service, then of course you say, excuse me, I got to go. Because then you may have to break in. But if not, you can't just kind of, you know, or just kind of stare blankly at them, and then they get the idea that it's time to kind of like. But that sensitivity, they're with friends, or those who are senior, or those who are junior, right? The mother gets something out of the relationship because she's so sensitive to the child. Child's even somewhere else playing, but she's seeing or worried, or that sensitivity is there. And that sensitivity also creates closeness. So it doesn't need, distance isn't a problem. Like that. It's a very unique kind of situation. So then that can be used in all these. And if we use that, then we're sensitive in all the environments. So that when we're in the temple, we're sensitive to other people. I'm not bumping into them. I'm not getting into their way. Or there's someone senior coming, how I do, how I deal. All these different things. And that's where the relationships actually can function and flourish. Is when we're sensitive to what's going on. Otherwise, if we're not sensitive, it means we're only doing what we are into. What our own mind is thinking, feeling, and willing. Rather than the whole idea of relationship means I'm sensitive to what the other person is thinking, feeling, and willing. Right? And so basically, we're talking about in mundane relationships, 50-50. I sacrifice 50%, the other person sacrifices 50%. And that's the perfection of material arrangement. So if we do that much, then prescribed duties are met, and it works very, very nicely. And we see even in the spiritual realm that this is also there. It means in Vaikuntha you'll find that. The devotee makes, you know, he makes that sacrifice, but he has some interest, you know, to be on Krishna's planet or, you know, being associated like that. And then Vishnu makes that he comes forward and they meet at that point. So that is the minimum, right, for either material perfection or the regular spiritual perfection. So we have to be willing to do that 50%, because we see in Vrindavan, they take it more. The devotee makes 100% surrender or sacrifice for Krishna, and Krishna makes 100% sacrifice for the devotee. So there it's a very unique situation, the Vrindavan situation. You don't find it in any other realm in the cosmic manifestation. Like that. The devotee completely surrenders, and the Lord completely surrenders to the devotee. So the relationship is the most intense because of that sacrifice, that complete sacrifice. So on this plane, sacrifice is the thing. We have to make that. So sacrifice means you have to be sensitive. You have to be able to see. Like I've been sitting, just to give an example of certain like sensitivity, where it's sensitivity doesn't mean mental. It just means you are aware of the other person and you care for what they're experiencing. Like I've been many times, this hasn't happened once, this has happened many, many times. I've been talking with like a Bengali gentleman, very nice aristocratic Bengali gentleman. And you're talking and, you know, they go through all the normal things, what are, you know, normal cares, you know, where are you from, what are you doing, and all these, and, you know, just different things. What is your experience, how are you liking this chanting and this culture here in India and all these different things. And they're not just asking it just to waste your time, but it's, you know, they want to know you. And they're willing, you can ask them the same questions, they'll discuss the same things back, and you get to know each other and all these. Now, if during that time, you kind of like, while you're talking, like kind of like look away in a concerned way or look at your watch, immediately they think, oh, I'm disturbing this person, he has to go, and I'm keeping him from whatever he's supposed to do. So immediately they go, oh, excuse me, he says you have to go, and this and that. And then you have, no, I was just, you know, just out of habit, you looked at your watch, or you just want to know what time it was because you have to do something later. And, you know, then after a few more minutes, you look again, and again they think, you're just being polite and listening to them, but actually you've got to go. They're so sensitive to these things. You know? Or in serving prasad, you see that you sit down and you're eating, and they see everything what's on your plate. See what's missing, what you're eating, you know, what is your mood while you're eating it, so they know you like that more or less. And they're always coming, and they offer, and they can tell the difference between you don't want, you're just being polite, you know. Actually, you want, but it's just polite to just, you know, not like, look like you want everything. So you just, no, it's okay. You know, even though they gave you enough, you know, for a mouse, but when they come with this next time, you just say, no, it's okay. They know that that's just you being polite, they give. Then they come later, and then they know that you've had enough, so you don't really want any more, but at the same time as you like the preparation, you would like to take more. So body satisfied, mind is not. So again, they'll know, and they'll know how to give it. And then they know when body, mind, spirit, everything is satisfied, and it's just like, You know, if you give in any more, you'll explode. So, and then they don't. So, because that's sensitivity. Because of that sensitivity, they're able to deal. So in that, you can do anything. That sensitivity has to be applied everywhere. So we have to take it out of just, you know, being sensitive to between boys and girls, purify that and apply it in all situations. You know, then we'll find that mood to be that sensitive and what buzz you get is found in everything you do, like that. Does that make sense?
I just want to know the motivation behind the sensitivity. This is because you know Krishna is actually concerned about everyone, and we as a servant should be also concerned about them, their welfare, or like that.
Yeah, that'll be a point, and just that we see one is respect. Maharaj's been talking so much on this point of respecting others. One has to be able to respect either that they're senior or that they're another living entity or the junior. In other words, the mood is service. Someone's senior to you, you serve. Someone's junior to you, it's your service that give them shelter, take care of them. That's your service. You know? In other words, as was brought out yesterday, is the problem wasn't that Venu was saying, you know, the king is the Nara Devata and everyone respects him. He's the representative of the Supreme Lord. All respect goes to him. That's the philosophy. The problem is that he's saying it and thinking it rather than the Brahmins. He's supposed to think, I am the servant of the Brahmins. Only under their protection and able guidance am I able to do anything. I'm a fool. I'm absorbed in all these passions and attachments. And therefore, I cannot direct the society properly, but by the nice guidance of my advisors, my brahminical advisors, I'm actually able to run the kingdom properly, like that. And then the Brahmins just think, no, it's our duty. You're the one who's doing. We have all the we know what has to be done, but we cannot do. We don't have the qualifications. You are doing. Therefore, you represent like this. So it goes that way. The problem comes when the person in the position of tattva takes the mood of that, you know, in the culture. And then it creates a problem. Right? Because knowing these things, but even if he does know these things, it's not that he won't know it, but his mood is not, yes, I'm the representative of God. If I'm supposed to represent God, God is giving shelter to everyone. It's my business to shelter every living entity under me. Like that. And respect all those above me. Because even we see Krishna gave example of how he would respect his parents, respect Ugrasena, and respect the Brahmins, like that. So one has to, in other words, knowing the philosophy is not enough. You have to know what is your mood within that. Where do you fit? So everyone should ideally know as much as possible the total picture, but specifically you have to know where you fit. The scriptures talk on this. Where do you fit? What is your particular duty and your mood? And then how you exchange with others. Like that. Then it becomes very clear. One has to catch that mood is that is everyone's a devotee, I have to respect, I have to deal properly. So whatever the relationship is, I have to deal properly. If they're equals, if they're juniors, if they're seniors. And if I don't know, then I have to be very careful. That is, I think Vishwanath makes that point. Is that if the Madhyama understands who's who, the Kanista doesn't understand. Right? Just by seeing and looking. They generally have to be told. Right? But the Madhyama can see and test. You know, I mean, by their observation, they can start to figure things out. Like that. But the Kanista doesn't. So the position, the Kanista then is nice to everybody. So you'll see that was one thing that struck me as difference between the West and in India. Is that in India, a big, wealthy, powerful person will come to the temple. And because they don't know who's who, even the newest, you know, devotee that's there, they're very respectful as if they're, you know, the person running the institution. And when they're there a little while, they start to know who's who, then they start adjusting. But they come in first to just being nice with everybody. Well, you generally see in the general Western culture, unless, you know, they're more kind of aristocratic, then When they deal, you're just a nobody. And then someone points out that, well, you know, he's, you know, this and this. Oh, excuse me, I didn't know. You know? Like that. So it's a little different. So the idea is one should be very, very careful. So if you don't know somebody, like at a festival like this, you'd be very careful. You may find out they're the temple president or they're, you know, somebody, you know. Like that, you know. You find out later they're the one that you're staying in the room with, you know. So you should be careful. You understand? If that mood, then other things will come. Yes, what is it?
I wanted to ask, there is a very thin line about service attitude and control.
Yeah.
Can you
explain that? Oh, I see. Yeah. So this point between service attitude and control means service means that whatever is our position, we're supposed to interact with the others. So if someone's junior, then business is somehow or another helping them. You know? And then if we're in a position of authority and they're our dependent, then that means we have to control the environment so that they will benefit. And that may mean that they have to be disciplined also within the environment so that they are best situated and most satisfied. Like that. So the control is a tool of giving shelter or giving benefit. It's not the other way around. So Kshatriya isn't one who controls. Kshatriya is one who gives shelter to everything. And by that, he controls. Like that. Either by speaking very nicely, giving position, separating you from everybody else, or giving chastisement. You know, so they'll use these mediums. So those are all part of control. But that is because they have to give shelter. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. You had something like that? You had something? Then we'll get
back. I was thinking when you spoke about this finding the principles behind. So when I study on my own, so I would read in different similar happenings in the scriptures, and from that I should make out what is the principle and see from different points of view.
By our study, then we should try to see the similarities and see what is the underlying principles. If we can understand them, nice. If not, then we inquire. That was the thing is Arjuna, because what it is when you have different situations, then the application seems to be contradictory. So it takes some experience to understand it was the same principle, but different situations, so we applied it in different ways. Therefore, in the Gita, Arjuna is always saying that that what Krishna is explaining is contradictory. You know, a few times he brings up this. He brings up this point. Just a green, grasshoppers. They're said in South India to be the carrier of Lakshmi, so they're not bad. Brown ones not, the green ones. Seems to be attracted by the garland. So either we can see ourselves or in discussion with others. That's the point of sadhu sangha, is we discuss with others, our friends and other things like that. We discuss with, or we hear from others, we ask these questions. So the whole idea is that the more we study, the more we're trained, the more we understand of these things, and you start to see the similarities. Because you see what are the points made, what are the different aspects that are there, and you see similarities. You know? Like Prabhupada, many times you see is that specific words that have specific meanings are always used. And you see these words used everywhere. Like you'll see always become free from fear, become fixed. You know, become free from misgivings, these things, free from doubts. These are all meaning basically the same position. And so whenever those come up, you know what these are talking about. You know, you start to learn the language, learn the method of thought, learn the how they categorize things. Means the Shastra, the Acharyas always categorize in ways that we can understand them. Lord Chaitanya gave the the principle, you know, two, the two main, I mean, actually gave the main thing that we categorize, we categorize everything from, is this understanding relationship, process, and goal. And he says all the Vedic literatures are divided into this. Then he refined this further by giving us the Dasa Mool, the 10 points of how this is broken up. You know, the first, I think, yeah, the first one is just the scriptures. That's okay. That's good. I mean, I won't. Seems to be enjoying himself. This is own private swimming pool here. Then you have the first principle is the scriptures on which everything's based, because Lord Chaitanya said the scriptures all are all delineating sambandhabhideya prayojana, our relationships, the activities, and the goal of these activities. So he gave scriptures and these three. So then the Dasa Mool is the scriptures, and then you have nine points of that. The first seven are divided into two. This is relationship. The eighth is the process, and the ninth is the goal. So, and all the acharyas use this framework whenever they hang on this, and then they refine these or take one aspect of it. You know, like Rupa Goswami primarily speaks on Abhideya, like that. Sanatana Goswami speaks primarily on Sambandha, like that. Though he gives the Abhideya of that, and Rupa Goswami gives also the Sambandha, like this. But so after a while you start to see what are these relationships that are going on here. And then it makes it easier to catch oneself. But otherwise, that's the purpose of discussing with others. We have to be very careful as what in our study we don't jump to conclusions. See, the difficulty comes in the West because we don't necessarily have, haven't seen. You know, that was the reason that Prabhupada would give what he by his own example and explanation, and in the books and explained. But also, we see that he recommended that devotees spend some time in India to see these things. Maharaj pointed that out yesterday. I remember I think Prabhupada may have been even 76, had mentioned that ideally everyone should spend a year just to gain the culture and understandings like that, so that when they come to the West, they know how to apply it, because many times you don't see. Like, whatever Prabhupada talks about in the books, you know, and the different activities or the examples or the things that are going on that have, you know, happened thousands of years ago between the Prajapatis and the kings and the Brahmins, I've seen those things in India. You know, I can't think of a situation I haven't seen. So whenever he mentions these things, so many times devotees will say, oh, that's 5,000 years ago. But I've seen it, you know, in the last, you know, so many years. There's different acts. They're there. The example is there. It's still going on in India. You know, these things that are discussed, they're still happening. Like that. It may be getting rarer and rarer. It used to be that everywhere you'd see it, and it would be the rare person or the people living under Howrah Bridge that wouldn't follow the finer aspects, though they would follow the main principles. And everybody else, the middle class, upper class, all followed the details. Now it's getting more and more rare, that because of the benefits of now they have, before they only used to have Indian television. So then they could only degrade themselves as much as within their own scope of you know, what do you call it? You know, mundane thought, which was still within, they were still bound within the kind of Vedic concepts. But now they've advanced to the point they have, you know, they have Western television, specifically American television. So now they're able to, you know, get better ideas for degradation much quicker. You know, does that make sense?
I was wondering, according to this culture, this good education that we are looking for, I see some kind of dealing sometimes, and I'm wondering what it is according to the, let's say, right culture, how Indian, let's say in India, who have the right culture, would do this. For example, I would just give an example. I don't know how to put it otherwise. Let's say I'm going I want to go somewhere, and someone is also going there with the car. Oh, can I go with you? Yeah, no problem. But then they will ask me to pay something. And no, I tell them, oh yeah, you can go, I'm going there. Like something spontaneous. But then, whoops, I have to pay. And now they look so normal for many persons that, you know, like this, something like spontaneous service is like an opportunity. Well, it's not even an opportunity nowadays, it's like normal. Even from parties, oh, there is a party somewhere, we're going to such person. Okay, you must pay that much to cover the shit, so whatever it is, because I don't know, I feel something wrong there, but I'm wondering, according to the view of this education of culture, how is it seen, this spontaneous thing that, oh yes, I'm doing this with you, or I'm lending, I'm giving you some soap, you don't have any more soap, or, but you have to pay me, or helping someone, you know, helping someone just for helping or in exchange. Mm. And if I am in India and I'm acting like that, will I insult them, or will they be insulted if I pay them in exchange of something? They invite me to their home and I pay them. Mm. I think I must give them money also. Will they be insulted or?
But there's a few things that would main the beginning what you were discussing. Do you have the aspect of, it all comes back to that point of that sensitivity. Is that, see, the process works nicely is that someone's going somewhere and they're going anyway, they have space, you go with them. But then that also means whenever you're going somewhere, if there's space, then you take people. So the point is if everybody's in that mood, then it works nicely. Because sometimes, you know, you benefit, sometimes the other person benefits. The other aspect is that then you have the, you know, the association and different things that you're doing together, so it's always nicer to be in association with devotees than not. So those aspects are there. The other thing is that if you're going and it's going to be an expense for them, then one can always offer, you know, should I pay something, this and that. And then if they can take care of it themselves, you know, any way they're going, there's no problem and all that, then, you know, it's natural, you know, why you should pay. I'm going anyway, you know. Place is there. Same time is that we are sensitive, that if they have difficulty, then, you know, maybe they will take, you know. But it won't be a feeling of, you know, they won't be overly happy about that. You know, it's just a matter of, I don't have the money to take care. So these aspects must be there. Point is that it's a mentality, it means a scarcity mentality, then we see that Lakshmi is not there. They say, I think, is it in your class, read, that when the wife is properly trained and deals very nicely, when she comes into that family, then Lakshmi comes with her. Because of her mentality, everyone prospers in the family. Because when her mood is very good and giving and caring and all that, everybody else, they prosper. Their emotions, everything becomes nicely balanced, and then the whole family prospers. So that if we have that mentality, then generally we'll see everything works, everything happens. Because it's understood, you know, things aren't so much. So there's both sides. There's someone who they're going anyway, whether you go or not, then why they should charge? If it's a matter of, well, I would like to go, but I don't really have enough money to go, and, you know, and you want to go, but you don't have enough, we put it together, we can go. That's another thing. That's more of a friendship kind of thing. So one has to be one has to see very much these things. The one thing that was there before, I remember just on the thing of when you mentioned on the temple level in that, was this, we were traveling from, in, this is what, 73, and we just had a Panchatattva picture temple in St. Louis. So there was, you know, this, when the rule is this, when you're there at the temple, you do the full worship. And when you're not there, you just lock the door and go off. There's no obligation, you know, as such. not as if when you have installed deities. So we were traveling like that, and we would go to another temple on the way. Let's say we're going to San Francisco Rapa Yatra, and on the way you go through Denver or something, you go through another temple. When you get to that temple, the first thing you do is go in, offer your obeisance to the deities. The second thing is you go see the temple president, the temple commander, and say, "We're here. What can we do? What is our service?" You know? Like that. So you become part of that temple. So you're not there to enjoy. You're there to serve and do things in the temple. And I remember, you know, we went out door to door Sankirtan. You know, whatever we collected and that went to the temple. And, you know, we weren't thinking, well, our men went out, so we should get a cut and this and that. No, we're there at your temple. You're taking care. Whatever service you give us, the benefits of that go to the temple. And then after, you know, 1 or 2 days, then we traveled on. So that mood is, if the mood is, I come here, there's a big festival, and I come here just to enjoy the festival, then that means a small party has to do all the work, and it becomes very difficult. So some service must be there. As Krishna says, first you surrender, if not sadhana, if not do work, and if not give money. So it's basically the same principle is there. If we're able to do and all this, then you understand it's very much the mood is there. And then you also have to see the position of the place and the temple and all those kind of things. Because the problem is there's so many things in here. Each situation will be different. So we're just speaking on that principle that sensitivity is, each party is sensitive to the other. Another thing is if you're invited, then generally you don't offer to pay something, because they would feel bad. We've invited you, it means we'll take care of you. So generally what's done is you take a gift. And you just bring something for them. You know, for their deities or for something like that. And that's accepted. But they won't take payment for their invitation. That's, yeah. Does that make any sense? Or, you know, in other words, the principle is ask a general question, get a general answer. You know, because it's so general that unless you get into specific detail, what's happening, who's involved in this, it's very hard to apply. You don't look to be very happy with this. Yeah. Yes.
I have a question about Prabhupada's Lilamrita. And it's a passage when Prabhupada first went to Sibu. And then the devotees, they were very inexperienced, and they, you know, they were cooking for him, and the chapatis they burned, you know, and were installing that Gopinath, and so many things went wrong. And then afterwards, Prabhupada, he went away after a few days, 4 or 5 days, and he prayed to Radha Gopinath, so please give them like the intelligence that they will worship you properly, because they are nechas, you know. And then, well, I was just wondering what is in this context, because also the devotees, they were initiated, and they someday got some Brahman initiation or first and second initiation at the same time. So about Prabhupada's, you know, like calling them nechas and there being one Brahmanas at the same time, could you comment something?
Yeah, this is what we were discussing on the first day. Is the point of is one has one's occupational abilities, one has one's mentality, right? And one has one's, you know, training in the proper culture. So by culture, these devotees don't know much. They still act and do everything like the mlechas. They don't know actually the proper culture. Though they may be sincere and all that and are wanting to have the right mentality, you know, at least to some degree it's developing to serve the Lord in the proper, you know, to the proper, in the way of trying to please the Lord. Therefore, Prabhupada installed the deities. But as far as their culture goes, they don't know how to cook, how to do any of these properly. So then Prabhupada is asking that Krishna give the intelligence so that can be be done. You know, they'll gain that intelligence. Does this mean anything? Or?
Yeah. So
these two things, just like we were saying, someone is brahminical in motivation and consciousness, but one may be performing any of the varnas, you know, conditional activities. Yeah, we discussed that on the first day. You were here? We discussed on the first day is that Brahman specifically is the consciousness. Then there's an activity that goes with that consciousness. So because a devotee is a Brahman, because they're a realized Brahman, a Brahman who becomes realized becomes a devotee. Therefore, any devotee who then who surrenders to Krishna is a Brahman. So we have Brahman in the desire to obtain to Brahman. You know, understand Brahman, serve Brahman. So that's Krishna. But in that, we have our conditioned nature. We have our mind, we have our body. And we engage this according to the nature, which may be brahminical occupational activities, maybe kshatriya, maybe vaishya. It doesn't matter. That's why the culture is so unique. It's just what activities or what service we do, then it's according to our varna because we'll do that best. But our devotional life, our devotional interactions will all be as devotees. It doesn't matter that someone's a Brahmin or someone's this. Like that. They may have any relationship. You know? Like that, a senior, junior, or equal. You know? Unless, you know, some activities are very obvious, like a position, like a temple president, or, you know, someone's, you know, doing a very, very specific service. You know? Then only then some of the aspect of what service they're doing by its position, then there may be some consideration in etiquette. But otherwise, the general, it won't apply. All right? So one has to see that the culture may be very different. All right? Okay.
Please, can you tell me what sadhana means and the principles of it?
Sadhana. Sadhana means that we is practice. Those things that we services that we perform according to the rules and regulations, you know, to please Krishna, that is sadhana. So whatever is our, you know, specifically that will be in relationship to our devotional activities. You know, like that. But as we see, then it all becomes part of it. As we see our service and everything, then that's also part of the but specifically, it's more means our chanting our rounds, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam class, associating with devotees, these activities, worshipping the deity. Right?
Maharaj, you've mentioned that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur speaks about how Kanishtha deals with others, and I was thinking about this hierarchy, which is like a part of the culture and
part
of the culture and in many cases we are we do not know about them and the second thing is we are not conscious that we should follow it and it's also there are many like aspects of this the hierarchy whether that's age or how long one is in the movement or is in gender and it interrelates and in many cases it's like we don't have so much guidance and how to put it together. Could you elaborate on that?
Means the importance and guidance we see the Prabhupada is always talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean it's constantly being mentioned. The culture of Krishna consciousness and having proper culture, like in this chapter, all the problems are being related back to lack of culture and training.
Yeah.
You know? So it becomes very, very obvious that Prabhupada is wanting us to become cultured. So then that means then we have the desire. Right? It means if you want to learn something, three things have to be there. Right? You have to have the interest to learn it. Then as you learn things, you want to apply it. Right? You want to do service. Seva means you apply it and do service. So in trying to apply it, then we, of course, run into difficulties because we're new at it. So there's questions. So the whole thing is if we want to apply it, we'll have to have questions. How to apply, how to deal. So the inspiration will come from seeing others, hearing from others, reading from the books. These different things will be there. We must take them very... So much is there. We have to understand that the Bhagavatam has been written in the form it has been written for our benefit. I don't know if I explained on this about why Bhagavatam is written in story form. Is that explained here? Okay. So I touched on it in class. It may have been somewhere else. Is that... So in the other ages, then one would get one's more inspiration from the Vedanta Sutra or from the Upanishads, and one was able to take that and apply it, right? Because that was specifically dealing with higher subject matter. It means the culture was studied separately, right? You have the Vedas, you have four Vedas. Each Veda is divided into four parts. Four parts, so you have the Samhita, which is the actual text, all the hymns, all the verses. The second part is called the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas, they deal with the rituals, or the culture. That means these all the different ceremonies, dealings, all these things, based on the Vedic rituals. Vedic mantras. Means you have a body of mantras, they have to be used. So this one's used in this sacrifice, this one's used in this situation, this is the ritual, how it's done. Right? Then, explaining those, you get all these different, the Dharma Shastras, like Manu Samhita and all these, which get into fine detail. So these were studied as their own branch of knowledge. Right? Then you had the Aranyakas, which were Aranya means the forest. So generally the Vanaprasthas would deal with this. We see the first, in the Gurukul, the Brahmacharis would memorize all the verses. As Grihasthas, then they would practice all the ceremonies as Brahmins and doing that those rituals. Then, as Vanaprasthas, then their main emphasis would be on the Aranyakas. Right? Because they would go to the forest, they would study. And the Aranyakas, they give what is the purpose of the ritual. Means why that ritual is being done with that mantra and what's all the different, like that. And then in the fourth stage, then was the Upanishads, which gave this straight philosophy. Right? So now people could study them separately and put them all together. Right? You could study the verses, you could study the purposes, you could study, and throughout the life, and you could remember back to what was there before and all these different things. But in the Kali Yuga, we see that there's a slight problem. The, lack of memory, lack of intelligence, lack of determination, so many qualities are lacking. Therefore, it becomes very hard for someone to study all these and put them all together. Right? You study the philosophy and you understand that, and you understand that how the material world works, and you understand everything works like that. It's like water in your cup and water in the ocean act in the same way. So the water in the ocean may take on some other aspects to it, but they're all connected to the basic principles. So the whole, that was the idea, is that you could study that and then connect the whole thing together. You studied all these different things separately. When you studied the Upanishads, then you saw the thread to the whole thing. Like that. But you did it yourself. It was a do-it-yourself kit. Right? That or with your teacher. And if your teacher had understood that, then you got the benefit. If you didn't, then you didn't. But in the Kali Yuga, no one wants to sit down and just hear straight philosophy. No one wants to sit down and atato brahma jigyasa. Now is time to inquire about the Supreme, Then, janmadhyasyayataha, everything is coming from the Supreme Lord. Lord Shastra Yonit Bhat, it's all coming from the Shastras. Like that. And that's all you got. And then from that you have to expand it. No one's happy to do that. Or sit down, he walks, he does not walk, he's very near, he's very far away. What's going on? What's that got to do with me, So in the Kali Yuga, the Puranas are called the fifth Veda. Because There they explain, they take all that knowledge and put it all together in one thing, in one form. Right? And then, but still that wasn't enough. Vyasadeva wasn't satisfied because he hadn't given the philosophy in there. I mean, it's there, but it hadn't been clearly... I put him out the window. Having a good time there. Huh? Oh, well. It's all right. Then you can just leave them. Because he didn't connect in there. There he had connected all the material knowledge together. Right? Knowledge kind of from the angle of passion, goodness, and ignorance. But he hadn't made it very obvious, the philosophy. So then the Bhagavatam, then the philosophy becomes the prominent feature. And then all the stories then back it up and show practically how people live that. It means you have a philosophy that will establish, to get that philosophy, you have to have some rules of culture. Culture and sadhana. Right? So the two are connected. You can't have one without the other. Prabhupada makes that point. Philosophy without religion, or in other words, a code of conduct, is mental speculation. Because how you'll apply it? You can't apply it. We have a body. We have a mind. We have to use that to apply it. So unless there's some rules for applying it through the body and mind, all you can do is speculate. It'll never get off the mental platform. It'll never come down to actually engaging yourself. And if you just have the body of knowledge, you know, you have the religion and the philosophy, there's no direction to it. Where is it supposed to go? Right? Then you can go any direction. So you end up nowhere. So you must have the philosophy, you must have that code of conduct that you apply it with. And the Bhagavatam then perfectly gives that relationship. So that's why it's given in that form. And then we see of that, so that's for any Vaishnav. Right? Then we see to refine it even more, give it more direction, then we have the same system happening in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Right? That's why it's considered the next, and it's the best of all those books. Because you have Chaitanya Bhagavat, you have Chaitanya Mangal, you have all these different books on Lord Chaitanya. But they're giving just more narration of the stories, and it's nice stories. But it's not specifically bringing to the front the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It's just telling the Lord's story. And it doesn't give it from the angle of the preacher. Because Lord Chaitanya came to preach. So Chaitanya Charitamrita therefore takes on the flavor of being the topmost literature, because it shows how the Gaudiya Vaishnav takes that philosophy, preaches, and lives the culture according to Bhagavatam. In other words, Chaitanya Charitamrita is how we today live the culture of the Bhagavatam. Right? You know, specifically just in our life, sitting, eating, this and that. Because the Bhagavatam doesn't always get into some of those. They get into other details. Those are already explained. Others, how we come together, sit, eat. You know? You see specifically how Lord Chaitanya would sit, how they would serve, how they would eat, what would be their mood. You know? You see those things.
Sometimes, at least, I've approached the problem that you have difficulty to match what is more important than whether seniority according to age, or how long one is in the movement, or according to knowledge, and how does it interact. Because I could perceive that many of the problems came from not understanding that principle, for example, all those problems with parents, and how to deal with them. At the same time, understand that we have superior knowledge, because, for example, they are not accepting Krishna consciousness, and in that case, it was like it was difficult to find the balance, how to balance that. This that seems to be art, how to balance all those aspects.
Yeah. So we have. Respect is seen on different platforms. It means Everybody looks at all these, but you know, one or something is more important for the other. But the basic areas are age and fame, right? Age, fame, then wealth, influence, you know, or power, position, like that. Then you have knowledge, and these are all for the four varnas. Shudras, it's age and fame. Vaishyas, it's wealth. Kshatriyas, it's influence, power. And Brahmins, it's knowledge. And then amongst devotees, then it's a matter of realization. And then you have finer detail of who's senior by initiation. So one has to consider all these things. You know? So even kings get together. Okay, if you have a Vaishya and a king, then the king is more respected than the Vaishya. But then now what if you have two kings? Right? Who's more influential? You know, if he's more influential, he's more rich, he's more like that, he's older by age. Like that. So those things, so both have to be there. You may have a younger king who is much more influential, and you have an older king, you know, but the younger one will respect the elder because he's older. But the older one will respect the younger one because he's more influential. So the whole idea is that you're dealing with a two-way thing. So both these things would be there, just like Maharaj was just mentioning yesterday, the Shudras, you know, they have it, Mahajan. Just like if I want to cross the river, I get on a boat, it's run by the boatman. Now I may be the big Brahmin and all that, but now if he says, you know, my dear sir, please sit on the other side of the boat, I can't say, what do you mean? You don't tell me what to do. I guide everybody and all that. Yeah, your boat will sink. When you're in his field, you listen to him. That's all. That's the way it goes. Yeah. But it's common sense. Yes, it's common sense. And the Vedic culture is very practical, common sense. The philosophy is very practical. But unfortunately, we don't always have common sense. Right? Common sense is part of intelligence. Means you can discriminate. So it becomes too difficult. Oh, it's too difficult. I gotta deal with all these things. It's much easier just to be rough and nasty and just say we chant Hare Krishna and we don't care.
Most of the problems comes from there's the partial application of that. We will only deal with that particular subject, yeah. Like only according to age or only according to power or something.
Yeah. It means it's whatever we value. So it's the half a duck principle. We just like the half which we like, you know. We're interested in power, so whoever's powerful, we respect them. And if someone's not powerful, we don't care, even if they're more knowledgeable or very wealthy. Or so the whole thing, the Vedic culture, you had to know all of it. It's mentioned that if you're going down a road, it says even a man of knowledge or power will move off the road for various persons. Like if there's a small road, a path, and it's only big enough for one person. So you may have the big Brahmin going one way, but if someone coming the other way is carrying something, you know, like bricks or something on their head, the man of knowledge will step off the road. Because he can say, yes, I'm seeing you this and that, but of what benefit is the other person getting? Because he's having something, he's preoccupied with carrying his burden. He won't be able to properly offer his respects and dealings. So if he may do that, he may see, oh, here's Brahman, move off the path. But then it disturbs his work, because he's following his prescribed duties, which is given by God, it's God's work. Right? So therefore, it's a disturbance to his work, for the Brahman to do that. And so they'll move to let the other person pass. Plus, then the other person then has more respect. He'll actually get more respect by the Brahman stepping off the road than if the Brahman stays on the road and he has to move off. Right? Because he's attached to the body and you have, you know, 12 bricks on your head and you got to move off. It's a great disturbance. You may drop the bricks, so many different things. So one has to, the whole Vedic culture is balanced. Because you, in any case, you have to give up the sacrifice. So on one side, someone may be the prominent, but on the other side, the other one's the prominent. Right? And so when the Brahmin goes to the boatman says how things work. And when the boatman goes to the Brahmin says how things work. You know, but in an assembly of people, then if it's about, you know, depending on what it is, then the Brahmin will be.
There's the question of to whom the respect goes and whose protectors are like shelter, like you have mentioned. Yeah.
Like that. But point is these protection and shelter can go on simultaneously. You can be respecting someone else at the same time giving shelter. It's just like when the parents are with their parents, with their children. They're still the parents of their children and the children of their parents. So simultaneously both are going on. They may be talking to their parents, same time the child's coming up and sitting on their lap. You know, same time the kid gets off their lap, goes over to the grandparents. They're like that. It's one has to be, the whole Vedic culture is how to maintain many rasas all at once, many considerations, and that makes for very, very complete people. Very different kind of people. See, the Western mentality is you only have one rasa, and that's myself. You know? Like we were joking out on the road this morning, they have these things for developing self-confidence. You get up in the morning and you look at yourself in the mirror and go, I like you. You know, even you got wrinkles, I like you. You know, you're an okay guy. You know, you try to tell yourself that you're okay. You know, it's a very strange. So what happens is everyone becomes very independent, doing their own thing. So that means if I'm independent, I never sacrifice. So I only taste one rasa. I don't taste anything more. Right? Whatever I want, that's all that ever happens. So I don't actually taste many relationships with anybody because I'm only doing my thing. Well, if I live in a big joint family or in a community, I'm restricted. I feel restricted. But I have so many relationships because of that. So the point comes down to, do we take the restriction and enjoy the relationships or throw away the restriction and enjoy our senses? That's basically what we're left with. There's not something else. I mean, of course, you can leave both and go off to the forest and be a Paramahamsa. But, you know, if we can do that, then, you know, we wouldn't probably be sitting here unless, of course, we've come down from that platform to preach, you know. You know? But the point is that's our choice. Accept the restrictions of living in you know, bigger family situations and communities and temples or whatever it is, and being restricted by that. You know, that others are going to complain if we're not attending the program or not doing different things, you know. But that establishes relationships. Right? We have to take it the whole way. Or we can just go, you know, we don't like people telling us what to do, go out on our own and enjoy our senses. Right? But still, our senses will tell us what to do because the senses want to eat, so therefore you have to go to work.
So what does it mean to for ISKCON? Is it like we don't have only four rules, but we have many more which make a culture rather, and it seems that lacking of that is the cause of all those social problems.
Yeah. It means basically when you accept the rules, then you have a society. You don't accept, you don't. And basically the first thing one has to accept is this principle of service and surrender and respect for authority. That's like the bottom line. The simplest form of sambandha is there's God, there's us, we're His servant. So that means our mood is service and surrender and respect for authority. And we show that through using the material nature and His service. So then until that is established, you know, all the way down, you can't establish anything else. Because until that's there, you cannot establish the culture, the activities. Right? Because once I accept God is there, I'm His servant, then that means I'm going to do something to show that service. That manifests the culture. So unless that's there, it won't work. So the principles underlying respective authority, that has to be established. Once that's established, then you can start establishing what is proper. Because if someone knows what is proper, they won't be respected anyway. So who's going to listen? Like that. And then someone has the ability to establish it. They have the, you know, organizational abilities and those abilities. No one will accept that. So it won't function until you establish this authority. So So that respect is there, even just aside, I just remembered. There's a few conversations where Prabhupada's talking about dealings with the parents, even though they're not devotees. So in there, he sees his respect is there for the parents, but it doesn't mean that their instruction, if it's not good, we follow. But our respectful mood, proper dealings is there. He even expected devotees would offer their obeisances to their parents. Yeah, and I think Bharamananda, Giriraj, there's a few situations where he just had him offer obeisances. But it doesn't, and when they're sitting there instructing you and telling you all this nonsense stuff, you just sit there nicely and listen. And all. That's what Prahlad, he gave example to Prahlad. His father's telling him all kinds of stuff. His teachers are telling him all. He's listening. He's sitting there. He doesn't agree to it, doesn't follow it. But he behaves nicely. You know? So that way, then, they can't say you're not behaving properly. Because how many parents, the kids actually do what they want them to do? Right? They're not... Right? But if at least you behave nicely, happy. Okay. That's the thing. Mother is happy. You deal with her nicely, you know. It doesn't matter what the position, you know. People come to her and say, you know, your son's a rascal, nonsense, this and that. As long as you deal with her nicely, she'll say, no, but it doesn't matter, my son. You know, it doesn't matter because the relationship is there.
Because of lack of respect and the proper relationship, all those issues, women's issue and other issues come out because...
Everything. If there's no authority, there's no shelter. If there's no shelter, then automatically Brahmins get upset, women get upset, cows get upset, kids get upset, and old people get upset. We don't have many old people, so no one started that. Kids have already gotten upset. Women are upset now. Cows were upset before and were all dying, so I don't know if there's any left to be upset. And, you know, and Brahmins, you know, they're too tolerant, and, you know, nobody's, since they're not yelling and screaming, and they probably won't, no one will even notice it. You know? Yeah, so but the whole point is until there's authority, you don't have this thing. Then you can do the finer points, because everyone has to reciprocate properly. Means it's a very interesting point. The point is men respect the women as mother, right? Now that means in just proper dealings. But it's very important to note that mother doesn't mean the controlling authority in your occupational duty, right? This is a very important point. Because we're seeing such things in a very, you know, closed way, then it makes a problem. You have the prime minister, right? He has his mother. When he's with his mother's telling him, you know, you're not keeping your health good, and you're staying up late at night, and you're not eating properly, and too many meetings, and, you know, all these different things. And, you know, that's the relationship. He doesn't mind. Like that. He's respecting his mother. But when it comes to how he runs the country, it's none of her business. You understand? She may voice her opinion, but that's, you know, everyone's got an opinion. You know what I'm saying? So it's two separate things. So everybody, you know, can respect the temple president, all the Brahmins, everybody can respect the woman as mother. But that doesn't mean now they tell them how to run the temple and this and that. Mm-hmm. So both sides have to know where the limit is. So it's an emotional exchange. It means that it's a relationship. But there's occupational duty, which is another thing. Right? You see, all the rules for dealing with women and all that are within the rule of ashram. Like that. They're not in varna. Occupational duty is another thing. Like that. So when that's there, then you can balance it. But it's either, okay, we respect the women, but then they tell everything what to do. So therefore, then we don't bother with them. We don't listen to them. We don't, nothing. So you have to make that balance. Is that respect, that care, proper dealings, you know? It's just like you have, what do you call it? You know, men and women, they come to, you know, one door all at once. Unless someone is like, let's say, a spiritual leader or something like that, they may go first. But otherwise, the grihastha man or the brahmacharis who are like the children, the women will go first. So you have to see the situation. You know, they're very fine things. So our time is up.
Let the woman first.
Yeah, it depends on the situation. Of course, yeah, it is. Because the thing is, they have to be protected. So it has to be seen what is going to be the proper situation. That's in the things here, you know. But generally, like when you see, especially when you're inside. See, there's also inside is one, when you're outside is another. Outside, you see the man will lead. But still, when you come to getting into something, this, that, or moving through something, the women will go first. But that specifically is the grihastha's position, is they have to protect the community of women. Like that. That specifically is there. You know? So if there's the women are experiencing difficulties, it's more because the grihasthas aren't taking care. Right? Like you have a single mother. She can't take care of herself very well, just left on her own. But in India, in those big communities, everyone will give something. And then she can take care. If she has no kids, that's another thing. She can do service. If she has kids, she can't work and take care of the kid. Everyone knows that doesn't function. You know, you end up with a weird kid. Everyone gives a little something. And then she can raise a kid. You know? Same time as then, as Maharaj mentions, then there's the essential element of intelligence, of gratefulness. This is also a major lacking in the Malecha Yavana culture. No one's grateful for anything. So, lack of intelligence. So this creates big problem. Because if someone does that for you, then they don't care. You know, you're supposed to, of course. You know, but there's the relationship. They did it. So then that person is always humble and caring, and later on, children, then they do other things. They take care.
There's
no sense of obligation. Yeah. So we'll end now. And if there's anything, we'll come to it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.